We're talking today with Stuart Rimpf, who is technical support dairy nutritionist with Purina Animal Nutrition. Certainly, as these temps begin to rise, our dairy farmers know their cows are susceptible to heat stress, Stuart. Obviously can impact cow comfort, health, performance, even in relatively cool conditions, regions of the country. Talk to me about this, Stuart. As you take a look at the visual signs of heat stress, it's got to be one of the first signs to developing strategies to help us cope with heat. What are those visual signs?
So first thing, you've kind of nailed a lot of it right on the head there with, you know, it doesn't have to be Florida. I lived down there for 11 years. So, and we get hot in Wisconsin too. So, and we definitely experience heat stress up here. It isn't just a really limited problem. Heat stress in general, you know, what it is before to get into the symptoms, the first thing is, you know, what is it? It's when basically the heat exposure or the heat gain by the cow is greater than her normal ability to get rid of that heat. You know, we normally think, like you said, of this happens when we have elevated air temperatures, and you know, our rule of thumb or gold standard or whatever is when the temperature humidity index, and you can get these charts free from all over the place, when that combination of temperature and humidity impact effect, when that hits 60 degrees or higher, that's typically when we say we're in that heat stress zone where we're likely to experience it. If you want to get more simple, quite often when your air temperature gets over 72 degrees Fahrenheit, you're probably in that prime territory. Throw some sun exposure in there, and that'll make that drive that heat stress level higher. So again, could hit a little sooner, but also remember that the cows produce a lot of their own heat. I mean, it keeps them warm in the winter. That's great, but they're still doing that in the summer. So that as they digest feed, that generates, releases heat. This, the general metabolism creates heat. And that's there all the time. You add that to the, to that temperature side of things, and this combined effect that causes the heat stress. So what we've also seen is in your larger cows and your higher producing cows, you're actually going to see a heat stress symptoms even earlier or at lower temperatures than the 68 degree THI that we go by. So don't just think that you're safe until you get there. And the other thing is heat stress is, you know, it doesn't have to be constant. You know, all that cow has to do is be exposed to those conditions for a short time, and she'll start to show some stress. So quite often the first place we start to see heat stress is in the holding area in front of the parlor, where they, you know, you've grouped those animals together. They can't, you know, get rid of that heat as well. And then you end up with, you'll start to see the visual signs, and you asked what those were. The first thing I look for is increased respiration rate. I mean, that's my job, is to walk herds, look at cows, watch their behavior. It's simple thing is just to watch how fast they're breathing. And when you see that breath rate go up, then you know that they're not comfortable. There's something going on. And, you know, you don't wait for them to be panting and foaming at the mouth. Just an elevated respiration rate means they're under some degree of stress. Cows' behavior, again, like I said, they're not going to act the same. They're going to be moving around more. You tend to see more perching in the stalls. They're not comfortable. You see them standing more often. They're not lying down as much, and they tend to bunch in the middle of the barn. And there's a couple reasons for that, and hopefully we'll get the chance to go into that. But this bunching of animals goes right along. Heat stress is part of that cause there. Reduced feed intake is the thing that we worry about from a nutrition side, probably as much or more than anything else. We see they just don't eat as much. They eat during different times of the day. And with that drop in feed intake, we see a drop in cud chewing. So we don't see cud chewing as much. And we tend to see, you know, the big one is we lose milk. And then in your extreme cases where you're going to get all the way up to your panting and that sort of problem, we can get to the point where you actually do have lethargic cows that really don't want to do a whole lot. And that would be the most extreme case. We try to stay away from that if we can, though.
So what can we do to manage heat stress and take care of that cow? Any kind of abatement type strategies?
Several. I mean, we can look at a couple different things as far as first look at what's happening with that cow, with that lower production and lowered intake. What can we do to kind of to get around that? And I look at it in two or three different steps that we can do. One is we need to tailor it to what the animal that we're dealing with is. We typically think of heat stress as being a problem for that pre-peak or high cow. And when we do have those cows under stress, obviously we don't get peak milk. We see less milk production right up front. And we know that for every pound of peak milk that we don't get, we lose 200 to 250 pounds over the rest of that lactation. But then you get a girl right about at peak, or her intake is kind of peaked out or whatever, her intake is going to be lower. And even though her milk's lower, her intake's lower enough that she's not going to put weight back on as fast. And so now we don't tend to see quite as good a repro in those animals because they're still building that back up. So in there, that would be another concern that we need to try to address. And then, obviously, a tail end cow, when they go down on milk because of the heat stress and lack of intake, then we're not going to get that milk back from her ever. But another group of animals we tend to overlook is the dry cows. And what we've seen from research down in Florida is if we put dry cows under heat stress, not only will that impact that cow and her upcoming lactation, but that also can result in a smaller or lower birth weight calf and some other issues for that calf as it goes on. So what we do to manage is going to depend to some degree on the class of animal that we're going to deal with. But when it comes down to just practical things management wise that applies across the board, first thing I try to remember, when you walk the farm all winter, you see things happening over time. And what you can see is the fans, that infrastructure that people have put in over time to deal with heat stress, it needs to be maintained. So you need to get ready before the heat stress hits, and you need to look up and you need to look at the fans and is the belt on? Is the belt loose? Is the fan dirty? Are the screens around the fan dirty? All that impacts the amount of air that fan can move. And you've got the money spent on that fan. You've got it hung up there. Let's let it do its job the best it can. And similarly with the sprinkler systems, maintenance is huge on them. Over the winter, if you didn't drain the line properly, we could have some cracked or broken pieces of pipe. We could have dips and valleys that need to be, we need to re-slope that thing. We need to clean it up, get it ready. All that needs to be done ahead of time. And it's just maintenance that nobody wants to do, but you've spent the money to get that far, you might as well do it. Along that line, if you do have sprinklers, get a programmable controller for it if you can, if you don't already. That's really huge in both making that more effective and also saving you some water. We want to soak that cow down along her back, so soak her to the skin so that when the fan blows air over it, that water will evaporate off the skin. That's the cooling effect we're looking for. We don't want so much or it so far back that it's running down her udder because we don't want to cause mastitis issues or things like that. So we need to apply the right size droplet in the right place for the right amount of time to soak her down and not get excessive. And then what the controller is also going to do, aside from controlling how long that's applied, it's going to also change that the frequency of that application as the temperature goes up. In other words, as the temperature gets hotter, we don't just dump more water on her in a single bout. We do the same amount of water in each bout, but we repeat that over and over again more frequently to help her cool faster. So getting that programmable part working is huge. And then the other thing is, from a nutrition standpoint, would be adjusting your rations, and I think we'll probably get into that a little more specific in down here. But one thing I do see, though, that is kind of a dilemma for farmers, at least up here in the Midwest, and I think in the Northeast and other places, is we don't have super huge lagoons. We have limited manure storage, and people go, well, I don't want to put a sprinkler in because I don't want to fill my lagoon up with water. You know, I don't want to have to be emptying it too soon. And what people don't always remember is that those girls are going to eat or drink more water if you don't cool them. So it's a trade-off of, are they going to drink enough extra water to have that extra urine to fill your, how much faster is that filling your lagoon up versus if you ran a controlled sprinkler that was applying things correctly? So that's another one it's a tough one to weigh, but it's something that people need to remember. But those are management considerations, and the nutrition is, again, what I kind of get paid for.
Let's get into that. You're a dairy nutritionist. What kind of things can we do to that ration to make sure we're managing heat stress in these cows?
So I tried to start again with management, the nutritional strategies, and plenty of water, at least 3 inches of water space is our rule of thumb. Keep the feed cool that you're feeding, and that involves a lot of different management things. First off would be proper face management of your silos, peeling enough silage off that we're keeping it cool, we're keeping it fresh, so we're not putting already heated feed into the bunk. It's a particular problem with corn silage and high moisture corn where you might have some wild yeast. You know, that can cause it to heat very fast. What can we do? You could try some inoculants that might help that problem, but by the time we get to spring, it's too late for that. About all we can try to do is feed it fast enough through face management, feed fast enough to stay in stuff that's not as high in yeast and won't heat as fast. Another strategy along with that is that the cows, when it's really hot, they don't like to eat. So maybe change your feeding strategy. Rather than feed once a day, maybe we feed twice a day. Or if you feed twice a day, rather than your big feeding being at 5 in the morning or 3 or whenever you feed, you know, maybe that bigger feeding ought to be middle of the afternoon, late afternoon, just before the sun starts to set, and they start to, you know, once that air temperature starts cooling off, they feel a little better, they start eating more. That's the time to have fresh, cool feed. Along with that would be, don't contaminate the feed while it's there. I mean, that's one of the catches with fans and sprinklers. And then in a naturally ventilated barn with the curtains up, we get air moving all over. It's easy to blow some of that water that's meant to cool the cow onto the feed bunk. And that, again, is going to make soggy feed that the cows don't want to eat. And it can also increase the heating in that feed bunk. So those are all kind of non-nutritional things that you can do. And some other things would be managing your fans, lights, and curtains. I mentioned the cows like to bunch. So whatever we can do to disperse the cows is going to help them eat more feed. And what I mean by that is oftentimes we'll walk into a barn where the cows all grouped up, and you'll see, you know, the middle third of the bunk is licked clean, and there's a ton of feed on either end of the bunk, but nobody will go there because they're all bunched in the center. And so there's a number of reasons why they might bunch. Flies, there's a stress response that these are prey species animals, cows, so they tend to group together for security and safety, even though it makes them hotter. Another strategy that I've seen work pretty well, though, as surprised, is play with the curtains on a naturally ventilated barn. And sometimes it's the light. And if we can just put a little shade, even though it doesn't help the ventilation, if we can make that shadier, the cows will go into that darker area and we'll spread those cows out. The more of that bunk we can get them to eat, the better we are. Otherwise, you're going to be forced to keep pushing feed to the center to keep feed there. And even when you do that, there's only a limited number of animals that can eat in that limited space. So those are the non-nutritional things we can do. The nutritional things we can do would be feed more highly digestible feeds. I mean, we got a smaller package we can fit all our nutrients in, or we have to fit our nutrients in, so we don't have as much room for undigestible feed. And my only caution or caveat with that is that doesn't mean feeding less forage. In my book, it means feeding better forage. People worry about this high heat of fermentation with forages, and we got to be careful of that. And so we tend to back forages off, and we don't have enough room to put a lot of forage in because we need to put so much other nutrients in this smaller package. And we got to remember that cow's meant to run on forage. That's that rumen needs a forage mat. It needs a fiber mat. She needs to be chewing her cud and all that. And so, like I say, rather than feed less forage, maybe try to feed better forages. Adding fat is the kind of the go-to way to increase energy density in a ration. So fats are a big deal. In the summer, we tend to up the feed rate. And now that we have so many different types of fat, it's another chore to find the right balance of the different kinds of fat to make sure that we hold both energy level, milk production and butter fat test. There are several feed additives now too that will help with feed efficiency. And there's so many of them now. I think it's best to talk to your nutritionist, preferably your Purina nutritionist, and just review your management, your ration, and see which of these fit, because not every additive is going to be the right thing for your ration. You know, as far as old school, review the level of the ration, buffer in the ration. I mentioned feed intake goes down in heat stress. They chew their cud less because they've eaten less feed. When they chew their cud, they swallow a lot of saliva that has a buffer in it that helps maintain the rumen pH and helps with butterfat test and proper digestion. And we don't have that when she's not chewing her cud. So we tend to increase the amount of buffer we supplement in the summer. And sometimes we change the types of buffer that we use as well. Potassium is a big electrolyte or mineral that she loses a lot in the sweat. She also puts some out in the milk. So we tend to go and put a little extra potassium in the diet while we're at it. And there's a few different ways to do it. And again, talk to your nutritionist. What's the best and most economical way to do with that, I guess.
You got so much good information here, Stuart. Just recap for me. Tell me again, why is heat stress abatement really important for us?
Important in a number of ways. I'll get it down to three, I guess. One, that the effects impact not just that immediate time of that heat stress event, but through the whole lactation, for all the cows. It's going to impact health because it makes them more susceptible to things like mastitis. It can impact your repro. So it's a broad ranging, effect that's, And without heat stress abatement, we can be seeing 30% drops in milk production or better. With heat stress, we tend to see only like 10 to 15%. We still see something. The effects seem to build with multiple events. Here in Wisconsin, we tend to see the first event of heat stress. We hit a dip. We have a problem, but they bounce right back and they're looking really good just a week or two later. And then we hit another heat stress event end of July, first August or something. And they bounce back a little bit slower, but then we hit that third one at the end of August. And it just really is tough on these girls. They don't bounce back after that one. So if we can manage this, all the way through, then we can minimize the effect of each of these and maybe build the cow's tolerance. And that's the third important thing, is that this is a manageable stress. We can do things to mitigate this. So, and sometimes it's just as simple as adding an extra water outside of the parlor and hanging some soaker hoses over the exit alley to get a little extra water on these girls and get them cooler. That's all it takes. It'd be nice if that's all it took in all cases, but we can manage it. It has profound effects on our income and our cow's health and longevity. Let's deal with it the best we can.
Great information. Again, Stuart Rimpf with us, technical support dairy nutritionist with Purina Animal Nutrition. To learn more about managing heat stress, you can always talk to your Purina representative or visit purinamills.com. Great.